What's up? We're back, and feel like I just did one of these, but gonna be hearing a lot from me coming up. I got to do another one on Saturday that I believe I'll probably get out next Monday, maybe a little earlier. Put down in the comments when exactly you want me to get out that other video for next Saturday, the Walt Harris versus Alistair Overeem. But we're in Jacksonville again for this one, Glover Teixeira versus Anthony Smith. This main event was supposed to be in Lincoln, Nebraska. But obviously, with all this going on, it's going to be here now, and there's going to be basically a whole new fight card, a lot of new fights. The main event is still the same, but a lot of differences here, and we're going to get right into it with the first fight of the night. But before that, just make sure to hit the like button, comment, like, subscribe. But if you haven't watched the UFC 249 breakdown video, that is live on my channel as well. I will put it in the description and here on the screen at some point where you can click on it to go watch it. So thanks for supporting, man. Make sure to definitely leave a comment. I always like hearing your guys' opinions on who you guys like in these fights. Even if it's about UFC 249, you can comment on this one, you can comment on the other video, it doesn't really matter. I'll try to get back to everyone like I always do. And thanks for always supporting, guys. We just went over 4,000 subscribers, which is awesome. So we're, slowly moving up, doing pretty good. So, feeling good. Hopefully, we can do good on these picks as well. And with the first fight of the night here, we have Omar Morales taking on Gabriel Benitez. And this is an interesting fight because Gabriel Mowgli Benitez, he's usually a 145er, but I don't know why he's necessarily coming up here. Maybe it's just to get a fight. Maybe he's not in the best shape, not able to get the best training. Who knows? But for Omar Morales, he's a dangerous striker. He's a pretty nice addition to this lightweight division. He showed off his skill in that three-round decision victory over Dong Yung Ma in his debut. He's an explosive technical striker, really good kicks, and his kicks are a lot better than his punches. He does have some nasty low calf kicks he uses almost against everyone. We saw him destroy the lead leg of Harby Park in the Dana White Contender Series fight. And he's a fighter who likes to go forward, pressure, feint, but he stays on the outside. He'll occasionally, kick, wait to counter, and that's kind of his game, And he does have decent hand speed, straight punches. A lot of punching attacks will just be, one-shot combinations, one straight, one overhand. He does do a good job of countering while moving backwards. He'll plant and explode in with a power shot, and he will throw in combination on the counter, just usually not as a lead. And in the pocket, he doesn't really look comfortable there. His defense, his hands aren't the best. He kind of tries to, instead of exchange, he'll clinch up. And he's a smart fighter. He's low risk. Really nasty round kick, spinning kicks. He'll mix in some flying knees. He's a dangerous guy on the feet because he's going to go forward, but he can counter moving backwards. He's also very fast. He could throw a lot of different attacks. His leg kicks are superb. If you keep it a range striking fight, I think he has a chance against a lot of guys in the UFC. When you're fighting Omar, you have to make it ugly. Omar, he's still green, hasn't faced much adversity in his career, and we haven't seen how he reacts when he gets stunned, when he gets dropped. He is a fiery guy, though. He will scream, get pumped up after being hit. We saw that in his last fight. He seems like he would be willing to throw down if need be, but no one's really brought that out of him in any fights that I've been able to see. Omar, he does have two KO TKOs in his career. Obviously, he's undefeated, so never been finished by strikes. And his grappling is definitely still a bit of an unknown. There isn't a lot of footage of him grappling, but he's a big, explosive guy. In his Dana White Contender Series fight, he showed the ability to dig underhooks, circle off the cage, but he did allow himself to get backed up and controlled for periods of time in that fight against the cage. Kind of let his opponent survive because he was piecing him up on the feet, but his opponent was able to survive a little bit longer than he probably would have if he wasn't able to get that control there. But he was never taken down. He probably did land the more clinch strikes also. He does have some decent knees to the body there, and he has some submission victories. And apparently, he also won a decision with the wrestle heavy game plan. But unfortunately, I haven't been able to find footage of him defending or shooting very many takedowns. In his last fight with Dong Yung Ma, he did catch a couple kicks, get some takedowns, some control time. And his top game didn't look overly aggressive or dangerous in that fight. He was kind of just burning the clock, winning, kind of, just being a wet blanket a little bit. But he does have four career submissions. He showed good cardio in his last fight. And he's a composed guy. He's definitely going to be a tough test. And for Mowgli Benitez, he's stepping up here on short notice, kind of out of nowhere. I mean, he was linked. Morales was linked to several fights, but none were Mowgli Benitez. And Benitez, I haven't really seen. I don't think he was on the April 18th card. He was on the card March 21st in London, but that's almost 2 months ago at this point. And he's usually a featherweight, but this fight he's going to be fighting at lightweight. And, you know, it's hard to say how he's been training, but the fight being at 155 is an indication to me that maybe it's not ideal, because I don't think he's a guy that's coming up to 55 because it's, you know, going to be his mainstay. I think he's coming up to 55 because of this predicament we're in here. But Benitez, he's going to be the significantly more experienced fighter. He has more fights on the UFC banner than Morales has fights total in his career. So Benitez, he has been up and down in his UFC career, but he does have that experience advantage. He's 5-3, but he seems to lose whenever he gets a step up in competition. All the fighters Benitez has defeated in the UFC are no longer in the promotion. And his losses, they've came against three very tough fighters. In his last match, he actually did drop a big prospect in Sadiq Youssef, but ultimately, you know, Youssef came back and he was able to knock out Mowgli Benitez. But Mowgli is a very good striker. He's a southpaw, dangerous left kick, man. He has really nice inside leg kicks. He'll chop your legs down, good body kicks, good high kicks. Very powerful as well. A straight left hand is very nice, very fast. Good jab. He'll jab, then throw a right hook. Good footwork, good movement. Good job of just sliding right out of the way of your shots, landing counters. Only throws kicks with his left leg, though, really. So his right side, you kind of only have to worry about the jab, the right hook, the overhand. But he will, you know, throw with some power with the right hand. Benitez does lean back with his chin high. His defense isn't the greatest. He doesn't have the best head movement either. And he's always dangerous, though, because of his power, his pull countering ability. And he does have 7 knockouts in his career. He has a good chin, but he was finished pretty brutally in his last fight. He's been finished by strikes twice in his career. And Mowgli is not a grappler. He has just 1 takedown in 8 UFC fights. His takedown defense has improved a lot, but it's still pretty questionable. He's been taken down 18 times in 7 fights and only defended 56% of them in the UFC. Off of his back, he does have very good get-ups, though. He's hard to hold down. When he fought Enrique Barzola, he was able to stand up a bunch of times, but he got taken down, I think, 9 times in that fight. He does have some good guillotines. He will counter takedowns with the guillotine. He'll even jump guard with the guillotine, which I don't like to see. But he has gotten a few guillotines against guys after he rocks them. In this fight, I think Morales is the better grappler. Mowgli has to be ready to probably defend some takedown attempts, especially if he's doing well with the striking. Benitez does have 11 submissions. He has been submitted twice. He's a veteran, you know, good cardio. He's always a tough out. And this is an interesting fight because both guys, they're similar strikers. I feel Morales is a little bit cleaner, better with his technique, maybe. But Mowgli kicks extremely hard. And if Benitez can land some inside low kicks early, look for that too as Morales enters or exits, the chance for a knockout is there. For Morales, I think he just needs to do the same thing he did in his last fight. Stay sharp, stay composed, strike long range, try to mix in some grappling. He's the bigger fighter. He's taken much less damage also. I feel he's probably more dynamic with his skill set. So I have to go with Morales here, and I'm going to say he wins via TKO or decision. Oh, man, in this one we got a great fight here. Chase Sherman taking on Ike Villanueva. Both these guys, well, Ike is making his UFC debut. Chase is returning to the UFC. And Ike Villanueva, he's making his UFC debut simply because he's willing to step up, man. I mean, he has a 16-9 record. He's usually a light heavyweight. He's even competed as low as middleweight. And now he's going to be here fighting a heavyweight. And he's coming off a victory over Rashad Coulter. He has won 4 in a row. When I look at Villanueva, man, the first thing I think is he's going to be severely undersized. He's soft. He's fat at 205. So at heavyweight, I'm really not sure how he's going to perform or look. As a fighter, I'm not super impressed with him. He does have decent hands. And his left hook is good, but he's slow. He only does good against stationary targets that don't throw back. He likes to use forward pressure, back fighters to the cage, throw combinations. He will attack the body. I don't think he will do well against fighters who will make him move or force him to trade. And I really don't think he's going to like the power that's coming back at him that Chase Sherman has. Villanueva does look like he has some power himself, but not one-shot power. He seems like he hurts a lot of guys, stuns them, and then finishes them on the feet. He does have 13 KOs and 16 wins, though. And he's been finished three times, but he does have a pretty solid chin. He eats a lot of punches, and he's not much of a grappler. He does like to close the distance to control some opponents against the clinch, or in the clinch, against the fence, or kind of just try to just slow down the fight, but he doesn't really do much damage there. He does have a decent body lock, and when he gets in top position, he will try to transition quickly and get some finishes, but overall, he's really just a boxer. He can be taken down pretty easily. When he does get taken down, he doesn't look good at all. He's been submitted five times. He's never earned a submission, and he's a dangerous guy in the first round. I mean, all of his finishes have come in the first round, all 13. His cardio is questionable. After round one, he's only 3-6. He does have heart, but he slows down for sure. And Chase Sherman, he's somewhat miraculously found his way back to the UFC, man. He already had a 7-fight stint. He went 2-5, really struggled, could only muster up victories against super low-level competition. Since being cut in 2018, he's been very active. He went 3-0 in MMA, 3 first-round finishes, 1-1-1 in bare knuckle. And Sherman, he's coming off a loss in November in bare knuckle to Joey Beltran. It's pretty preposterous he's made his way back to the UFC here. And I kind of think his second run will be short-lived, win or lose. But Chase Sherman, he's a sloppy brawler, good chin, decent boxing, really nice low kicks. He finished two of his fights since leaving the UFC with low kicks. He finished a fight in the UFC with low kicks. And if he lands a few clean ones, it's a huge factor in the fight. He's just so sloppy, though, and he gains in brawls. The thing is here, he's much bigger. He probably hits harder than his opponent. And he's a durable guy. I don't think Ike will be able to take down Sherman or control him or vice versa. So I see this kind of being a striking fight. Sherman may get pieced up early, but I don't know. I just feel like he's going to outlast Isaac here, draw him into a brawl, and take him out. So could Isaac take him out in round one? Yeah, but I'm going to go with Chase Sherman here to get the win via second or third round TKO. All right, here we go. This is a good fight right here. Hunter Azar taking on Brian Kelleher. And Hunter Azar, he started his UFC career strong. He was a competitor on the Dana White Contender Series, and then he came in and won against Brad Katona, who was a tough winner, and it was a pretty dominant decision victory. The MMA Lab, they have a pretty distinct style with the low kicks, and he's a guy that uses that as well. It's definitely a signature part of his game. He attacks that calf, and he'll make his opponent's leg mush by the end of the first round, and he really likes the left hook. He starts almost all his combinations off with it. He'll double, triple up on it. He likes to use it as a counter, and he moves backwards with it very well. And he's good at feigning the left hook, coming back with the overhand right or a heavy low kick. And he's explosive. He'll always feint level changes, come into winging hooks, overhands. He was able to drop Brad Katona by doing this. Azar sets those attacks up very well by attacking the body. He will also throw some decent round kicks, body head. His rear leg body kick is pretty nice. And he definitely is dangerous. He's explosive. He packs power. He's a bit stiff on the feet, though. He wings a lot. And someone who's going to be, a sharper, faster, striker should be able to control distance, keep him on the outside, finesse him. He doesn't throw a ton of volume or different shots, but what he does do works for him. And when he can go forward, he's a tough guy to deal with, even on the feet. He could strike from long range and explode in also. And he has those low kicks, which is a big advantage for him. He also has an abnormally long reach. He's going to have a 7.5 inch reach advantage here over Kelleher. Defensively, Azar can leave a little bit to be desired. He can lean back with his chin high. He isn't really the most technical in the pocket or in exchanges, and doesn't look like he likes being pressured. Fighters could sometimes catch him as he tries to exit. He was dropped by LJ Schultz in 2019 in LFA. He is undefeated. He has a strong chin, good heart, and out of his 8 wins, he does have 3 knockouts. He's also a strong grappler. He's a 4-time Montana High School Wrestling State Champion. But his wrestling isn't elite. He doesn't look to have the best jiu-jitsu skills either. But he's very physical, good top control, good single, good double. good at using that to chain wrestle, come into body locks, work against the cage. And in top position, he likes to get that wrestling ride position, you know, try to get on your back. If you get up, mat return you, just grind. He will land some short shots, work for the rear naked choke. And if opponents try to scramble to a single leg or stand up, he does have a really nice front headlock. He'll snap opponents back down, good chokes from that position. In his last match, he was out-grappled by Brad Katona, though. He was taken down a couple of times. He was out-muscled in the clinch. And when Nazar gets taken down, he is very good at popping right back up. He's a scrappy guy. He will be hard to break and just get laid on. In this fight, I kind of expect Azar to try to use a similar game plan to the one he used against Katona. Try to walk down Kelleher, keep it standing, outstrike him. He may be able to take Kelleher down, but he always has to worry about the subs, and I just don't think it's worth the risk. If he's having his way on the feet, you know, just keep it there. Azar has just one career submission. He does have great cardio. He doesn't slow down, and he will be trying to win the entire time he's in there. I mean, he's a guy that is always looking to finish the fight. He's a fighter who I expect to have a long UFC career. And for Brian Kelleher, he saved his job with the first round submission victory over Oday Osborne in January. He was an underdog. He came off back-to-back losses, but came up big there in that spot. And he's looking, you know, looking at his career, it's kind of been up and down. He's 4-3 in the UFC. But his first three most notable opponents that he fought, he got finished in all three of those fights. I mean, I guess he did defeat Yuri Alcantara. He defeated Henan Barral. But those guys were a little bit at the end of their rope. And Kelleher, he is a tricky striker. He constantly is switching stances, pressuring forward. Good jab. He will jab himself into range for the straight, the overhand right. He will also jab, step back, try to pull counter. And he will throw some nice combinations body-head. He'll throw a left hook to the body, then to the head. And he'll also throw a left hook or right hook to the body, then to a spinning back fist. And he'll sit down in the pocket, wing big hooks, overhands. Definitely is willing to throw down. He'll also walk opponents in uppercuts. He likes throwing the uppercut left hook or uppercut right hook combination. And he'll throw some nice round front kicks as well. He'll throw some jab head kick combinations. His defense is not very good though. When he pressures forward, he leaves his chin high, his hands low. He'll walk into shots. He takes a lot of damage. He also struggles with low kicks. He doesn't check kicks. And I already told you guys about Hunter Azar's kick, so that's going to be a huge problem for him in this fight. Kelleher has also been hurt to the body, and Kelleher doesn't have the best footwork. When he's forced to move backwards, he gets cut off near the cage, and Lineker was able to knock him out that way. Kelleher has been knocked out just that one time. He does have a strong chin. He has 6 knockouts in his career, but really is more of a guy that makes opponents quit with volume. He isn't going to knock you out with one shot. But Brian Keller's grappling has always been a strong suit. He has a very dangerous guillotine. He got yet another guillotine finish in his last match. And Keller didn't face a high-level opponent in his last fight, but his wrestling looked improved. He did have a very nice entry on the single leg, switched it to a double, elevated, dumped his opponent, and from there he was dominant. Snatched up the guillotine, submitted Osborne. And Kelleher, he struggled taking down opponents in the past. He has just 29% takedown accuracy. But I will say that was a good sign in that fight, looking at that takedown. He does have good takedown defense. He's been taken down just one time in the UFC. And opponents have always, you know, been wary of trying to take him down because he could snatch up that neck. But in his fight with Montel Jackson, he did get dropped and darced. But that was definitely after he was hurt that he got submitted. I feel he's higher level with his jiu-jitsu in this matchup, but his wrestling isn't as good. I'm just not sure Kelleher will be able to get takedowns on a guy like Azur. If Azur, you know, shoots in stupidly, there's always a chance Kelleher can sub him. But I actually think this is going to be a stand-up fight. Kelleher's going to be the veteran here. He has good cardio. He has a lot of heart. Seems very hungry also, and he wants to prove he's one of the best guys in the world. This is a fight where Kelleher can also prove a lot of doubters wrong again. But I like Brian Kelleher, but I have to go with Hunter Azar here, man. I think the low kicks will play a huge factor. Azar's more athletic. He hits harder. He's a better wrestler. I just feel as if Kelleher needs to make it a dogfight, throw a ton of volume, try to make it fast-paced, eat shots to give shots, look for takedowns, and just try to force Azar into a mistake. I just think if he does that, Azar's going to land big shots, slow him down. I really think the low kicks are going to be a huge factor. Azar also has that cardio, that dog, that heart, And Keller is a vet. He can't be totally counted out, but I'm going with Azar pretty confidently here. Next, we have another fun fight with Michael Johnson taking on Thiago Moises. And Michael Johnson, you know, he's been linked to multiple fights, multiple opponents recently, but it looks like it's ultimately going to be Thiago Moises here. And he's making the return to 155. He did kind of have a disappointing run at featherweight. He's coming off of back-to-back losses, and he's only 2-5 in his last 7 fights. He needs a win here. He's getting a matchup here against a 1-2 fighter. And Thiago Moises, man, he's not had a great start to his UFC career. He lost 2 or 3 matches. But to be fair, he's fought tough opponents. He's lost to 2 arguably top 15 guys in Beneil Dariush and Demir Ismagulov. But Moises, he does have a good jab, good straight right hand, nice right hook. And he's powerful. He is a slow starter, but he picks it up as the fight goes on. Nasty kicks, big leg kicks, body kicks, round kicks to the head. He's athletic. He also throws some spinning heel kicks, jumping roundhouse kicks. And he's quick with the techniques, stays defensively sound. He'll throw some nice question mark kicks, pretty nasty, head kick. And, I mean, he's all right. I mean, he's not the worst guy in the world on the feet, but he doesn't really know how to strike moving backwards. He has to have his feet planted to strike. And when opponents pressure him, the only time he throws shots are when his back is against the cage and he's flat-footed. And I feel like Michael Johnson is really going to be able to offset his rhythm by landing some straight shots as he tries to, reset, tries to throw. And he was really getting hit with a lot of straight punch combinations in his last fight. And he could sometimes get very passive and just start circling the cage. But he's going to have a chance to win in the grappling. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's very good in the clinch with knees and elbows. Good body locks. He'll shoot doubles against the cage. And in recent fights, he's landed several well-timed single and double legs, even in space. And when he does get on top, he's aggressive. He prefers submission over submission. He has 5 submissions. And I think he's going to need to get one here to beat Johnson. This is a weird fight to me because Moises on the feet, I think he has little chance outside of landing a flash KO. I just think Michael Johnson, way too fast, better footwork. I think he's going to pick Moises apart on the feet. Moises needs to try to grapple, get the fight to the ground here, and close the show with the submission. But I'm going to go with Michael Johnson, and I'm actually going to pick him by knockout. I think this pandemic, you have to take some things into account. This fight's on short notice. Both guys didn't know they were going to fight each other for long. They have makeshift training camps. I think that's going to come down a lot to experience. And MJ, he's someone who's very skilled. He's always been known for doing well in the gym. In this environment, no fans, maybe he's going to shine here. And I think he may actually get a first-round knockout. So I'm going with Michael Johnson to get it done. And I'm actually pretty confident in Michael Johnson once again as well. Next, we got another interesting matchup here with Andre Arlovski taking on Felipe Lins. And Felipe Lins, this is going to be his UFC debut. He is coming off that $1 million run through the 2018 PFL season. He won the PFL. He finished all 4 of his opponents. He did suffer some injuries that forced him out of the 2019 season, though, and he hasn't fought since December of 2018. So both Lins and Arlovski also train at American Top Team, so it's a little weird they're fighting here. I'm sure they've sparred, drilled with each other before, but Lins is a smart fighter. He's smaller for heavyweight. He's usually a 205er. And he likes to use a lot of movement, counter-punching. He has a really nice jab, strong jab, body, head. Heavy low calf kicks as well. Really nice left hook. Nasty overhand right. He doesn't really throw much in combination unless he stuns you. Stays very counter-heavy. And if his opponent doesn't throw, the fights can be very boring. Lins does have very good counter hooks. Fast hand speed inside. Nice hook combinations in the pocket that put fighters out. Definitely has power when he sits down on his shots. He kind of drops guys like sack of potatoes, man. I mean, he has 8 KO TKO wins. He does have a questionable chin in 2 of his 3 losses. He's been knocked out. He holds his hands low. He can be backed up. And he kind of backs up in straight lines. He does have good movement or good head movement. But at heavyweight, it takes one to put you out. And when fighters pressure him, they seem to have success landing. And if they don't get hit with the counters coming in, Lins could be in trouble. But overall, Lins is a risk-averse striker, and he's a well-rounded fighter. He doesn't shoot takedowns very often, but he has shown some solid wrestling offensively and defensively. He finished his last fight with some knees in the clinch, nice double leg. And in top position, he does transition well to the back. In this fight, I don't expect much grappling, but it is in his back pocket. His takedown defense isn't bad, good balance, heavy hips, and fighters who can chain takedown attempts like Jared Rochalk can give him some problems, but he will counter with front chokes. He has a good guillotine. He got one over Kyle Alcantar in the PFL. And when Lins gets taken down, he could struggle to get back to his feet, but he does have an active guard. He'll go high guard, he'll attack submissions, throw some solid elbows off his back. He was controlled in round one against Jared Rochalk, but he's never been submitted. I don't see him getting taken down here by Arlovsky. He does have four submissions himself. He also has good cardio for a heavyweight. He can keep the same pace for five rounds. In his last fight, he did get a TKO finish late in the fourth round. And he's getting a big opportunity here to get a name win right off the bat. Start his UFC career off right. But for Andrei Arlovsky, he needs to bounce back. He had a pretty terrible performance in his last fight. He got finished in less than 30 seconds against Jarzinho Rosenstroke. And in recent fights, he may not have been winning them all, but he's been on the wrong end of some split decisions. He's been fighting tough. That was the first time he got knocked out since 2017, so that was definitely one of his worst performances in a long time. And he's still a good fighter. He has a good jab, nice leg kicks, a good straight right hook. He will also, you know, throw a right hook, left uppercut, right hook combination, good spinning back fists. You know, he works off the jab very well. He'll mix in a lot of spinning attacks. He'll go body head. He hasn't really been a guy that's getting knockouts, though. He hasn't gotten a knockout since 2015. But he does have a decent chin. I mean, he has been finished a lot, 12 times, but only 4 times since 2011. And he's gotten better as a grappler, but I just don't expect him to grapple here. In this fight, I think Arlovsky has to keep the volume high, throw a lot of feints, jabs, straight punches, try to throw, you know, the straight right down the middle. And Arlovsky needs to try to touch that chin and hurt Lins. Lins is going to do what he does, you know, look to counter off the jabs, feint, catch Arlovsky with the one-hitter quitter. And I also feel Lins is the better grappler, so he could go to that if he's struggling with the striking. Lins is going to be the smaller guy, though. I mean, I kind of have a feeling maybe he was on some supplements in the PFL. I mean, he fought at 205 on Bellator, came to the PFL, was looking like a yoked-up beast. And, man, I'm interested to see what he looks like for this fight. But Lins has the better cardio, and I just have to go with Felipe Lins by decision or by knockout. I just think he's going to be able to beat Arlovsky at this point, but interested to see what the size discrepancy is and what Lins looks like now with the more testing. All right, we're going to breeze through this one, guys. Sajara Eubanks taking on Sarah Moras. I mean, Eubanks, she definitely needs a win here. I mean, she moved back up to 135. She's 0-2 since then. She had gone 5-0 in the UFC previously, if you include tough, but struggled to make weight. She is getting a significant step down in competition from her first two opponents at bantamweight, but she's 4-4. Definitely feel like her job is on the line here. And for Sarah Moras, she did snap a 3-fight losing streak. She did get a third-round finish in her last fight. She was able to come through as an underdog, but Moras had a huge experience edge over Joe Jua. And she is one of the longest tenured fighters in the UFC. I mean, she's been in the UFC almost since the beginning. She competed on Tough 18. If you count her tough fights, Moras has fought 10 times in the UFC, 5-5. So, I mean, you know, she is what you expect. She's a 500 fighter. This fight's going to be a grappling match. I expect Eubanks to kind of fight to her strengths, knowing she needs to win. Moras has terrible takedown defense, you know, 37%. Eubanks, she's only gotten 44% of her takedowns, but she's been fighting much better wrestlers than Moras. Eubanks was able to take down girls like Roxanne, Aspen Ladd, Lauren Murphy, who are all much better wrestlers than Sarah. Eubanks has a nice blast double. To me, she has the better striking also. Moras' striking is just very subpar. She has decent forward pressure. In her last fight, she was able to get some takedowns, top control, but I don't think that's going to happen here. Eubanks has harder shots, better kicks, better top control. She's a black belt. I don't see her getting tapped out by that armbar of Sarah's, so I'm going with Eubanks via decision here. Up next here, we have a really good fight, Alexander Hernandez taking on Drew Dober. And Alexander Hernandez, he's been linked to a ton of fights recently, but he looked to finally find his dance partner here in Drew Dober. He's been training a long time for this fight. He should be in peak shape. He's gone as far to say that he thinks he had corona, but trained through it. He's fine now, and he's still looking to get his career back on track after two disappointing performances. Got finished by Cowboy, squeaked by Trinaldo in a questionable decision, and he's going to be taking on a guy on the complete opposite end of the spectrum in terms of career trajectory. Drew Dober has been peaking of late. He's won 5 of 6 fights. He's coming off 2 huge first-round knockouts. And he's been in the UFC for a long time. Maybe he's finally finding his stride. He was getting ready to fight Diego Ferreira, so he shouldn't have many excuses about conditioning. Ferreira's a fighter who will grapple heavy as well. So you have to believe, you know, he's been getting ready for a similar opponent. And if you've been on my channel, you know that we've been riding with Drew Dober lately. I picked Drew Dober to beat Nasrat Haqparast. We had him as the most confident pick and part of the parlay to beat Marco Polo Reyes. And he's a really good striker, man. I mean, really good ability to pull counter. Super calm in there. I mean, that's one of his best traits is he's calm in the fire. When he's in the pocket, he sees shots coming. He gets hit, but he knows they're there. He's ready to absorb them. He has the ability to pull counter with the leg kicks, with the straights, with the overhands. And in the first round, I mean, his ability to go in and out with the footwork, his power is just really, you know, it's dangerous. I mean, if you exchange with Drew Dober in the first round, if Alexander Hernandez goes in there and is dumb in the first round, disrespects Drew Dober's power, tries to dart in, dart out like he does at times with his chin high, Drew Dober could put him out. He really could. But, you know, if he doesn't do that, Drew Dober, after that first round, becomes a lot less dangerous with the power. He still is a very good striker, but he just doesn't have as many knockouts after that first round. And the thing about this matchup is I just believe that I'm just not sure if Drew Dober has the grappling chops here. You know, on the feet, I think Drew Dober is the better striker. But if Alexander Hernandez, who's very athletic, can close the gap very quickly, if he could start to implement some grappling, you know, chain wrestling against the cage, some takedowns, some clinch attacks against the cage, that's going to open up his striking. And Drew Dober is hittable. Hernandez hits very hard also. And I just feel like Drew Dober, man, he gets taken down pretty easily in fights. He gives his back a lot in fights to stand up. And he's willing to stay in that grappling when he can get out. I mean, we saw that against Beneil Dariush. He gets out. He's able to stand up, and he goes back down and tries to get on top of Beneil, gets swept, and gets submitted. And what have we seen from Drew Dober in more than one fight against OAM, against Beneil? He gives his back. He gets rear naked choked, and Alexander Hernandez is a good rear naked choker. When you watch this fight against OAM, he had a lot of really good scrambles as well, showed super high-level cardio, and the ability for Hernandez to scramble is going to be huge here if Dober wants to oblige him and grapple with him. So I really feel like Dober has to be much smarter with this fight IQ here. And I'm just not sure if he's going to do that. But for Alexander Hernandez, I do believe that he has the chance to get a submission. And when you watch his fights previous to the UFC, his fights with OAM, he's a smart guy, man. I mean, he got over-anxious against Cowboy. But in those fights, he's going for the takedown immediately, 10 seconds into the round. And if he does that against Dober, really dogs him out, I got to go with Alexander Hernandez. So the pick's going to be Alex Hernandez. I mean, he's been training a lot of grappling, you got to imagine. He's been working for Islam Makhachev. So I think he's going to use that grappling that he's been training, probably in reverse for Islam, on Drew Dober. And kind of get a, you know, grapple-fuck decision here. So I'm going with Alexander Hernandez to get the victory. Up next here, we have one of the best fights on the card, Marvin Vettori taking on Carl Roberson. And both Marvin and Carl are set to show down. You know, they're a battle of two middleweight prospects. Roberson, he's 4-1 at middleweight in the UFC. Vettori's 4-2-1. On the feet, I definitely favor Carl Roberson. Vettori is a good striker, but he lacks the power that Roberson has. Likes to pressure, stay in opponents' faces, throw a lot of volume, try to wear them down. Good jab, good right hook. He'll double, triple up on those shots. He doesn't put a lot of power into them. And then you'll kind of end combos with a big knee or a heavier punch, kind of like Nick Diaz style. He isn't a power striker. He only has 2 knockouts. He is super durable. He'll take shots to give shots. But against a guy like Carl, I think he lacks the technique and the power to hang on the feet. Vettori, he also doesn't check low kicks, which are one of Roberson's specialties. And that's where I think he may really struggle with the striking. If Carl can land some low kicks that hurt him, Marvin could be in for a long night. But Marvin, he's a strong grappler, nice body lock takedowns. He'll shoot in on the legs as well. And when Vettori gets the fight to the mat, he's active, looking for submissions, good at getting a dominant position, and I feel that's where he needs to be in this fight. He has a nice guillotine, good ground and pound, good rear naked chokes. He also doesn't bat off his back, And if he wants to win, I think he needs to push a heavy grappling style, a grinding pace, try to wear on Roberson, get him in a bad position, ultimately finish him. But Roberson cuts the cage off well, fast hands, straight shots down the barrel, sick jab, very nice straight punch counters, heavy low kicks. And he walks opponents down, great chin, picks his shots well, doesn't open up much. He doesn't really give opponents big openings to land counters. And in his last fight, he really smashed the lead leg of his opponent. And then he finished him in the third round. And he has heavy round kicks to the body, to the head. In this fight, I expect him to try a similar game plan. Try to walk down Vettori, work the leg kicks, kind of bully the bully, you know? Roberson, he needs to avoid grappling here. He sometimes can invite a grappling fight, get in the clinch, or go for takedowns of his own. His grappling isn't bad. He's shown to be dangerous. He will also throw some nice elbows to defend takedowns. He has decent sweeping ability, rear naked chokes, but he can be controlled on his back. He can give up dominant positions very easily. He's been submitted twice in the UFC and almost got submitted by Wellington Turman as well. And I think both guys are going to have cardio to fight for three rounds. I just think it's going to come down to who implements their game better. I'm going to go with Vettori to win a decision. But to me, this is a close fight that could go either way, man. I feel like both guys could win this fight, and it's kind of dog or pass at this point. And I'm not sure we have a fun fight between two similar guys. You know, Ricky Simon, he has dropped back-to-back fights. He did start 3-0 to start his UFC career. Both have come against big names and top 15 talents, so the losses aren't going to set him back too much. He is getting another tough match here in a former title challenger, Ray Borg. And Ray Borg, he's looked strong since returning in 2019. He did suffer a loss to Casey Kenny, but he's bounced back with two victories in a row. His fight with Kenny was also very close. A lot of people felt like he should have won that fight. Borg was linked to fight with Chito Vera on the 18th, so he's likely been training the best he can, and the fight will be back at 135 pounds for Borg, so, you know, he's going to be significantly smaller. He's going to have a 7-inch reach disadvantage, and this is an interesting matchup because it's a battle of two similar guys. Both fighters really, you know, they're grappling heavy. They use their cardio to break opponents, and they're wrestling pressure. Simone is going to be the bigger guy here. He's also the better striker, in my opinion. And with this fight, I think Simone's going to be more comfortable walking down Borg because he knows if he gets taken down, he probably is going to be able to scramble back up, and he has the cardio to do that for the full fight. Ricky isn't going to wilt like some of these fighters Ray Borg has fought in the past. On the feet, I just think he throws better, tighter punches, better fakes, better feints, good body shots, and he just throws harder and more impactful strikes. Simone, he's also had issue coming in recklessly at times, getting clipped with big shots, though. In this fight, I don't think he's going to have to worry about that much. You know, in 11 UFC fights, Borg has zero knockouts. In terms of the grappling, both guys are similar. They both like double legs, both chain wrestle, both have good scrambling, both can ride out position, both hit mat returns. I feel Borg probably has the better control and top position. And he's the back-taking specialist, but I'm just not sure he's going to be able to hold Simone down. Even if he can take his back, even if he could take him down, I think the wrestling could maybe favor Simone also, who's the bigger guy, especially if he can match the scrambling pace. Simone does have his back, you know, against the wall here, so he needs to really perform. He does give his back to stand up at times, so it's a little bit worrisome in this matchup. Borg may be able to backpack him to victory, but I just think Ricky's too dogged to allow someone to just hold him down and grind him out for three rounds. And we've seen Ricky against guys like, you know, Merab Dvalishvili, and he was able to match that pace. He was able to stand up whenever he got taken down. And I just think he answers the call here and gets a semi-dominant victory over Ray Borg. I see it being similar to the Casey Kenny fight with Ray Borg, but more striking exchanges that Simone forces and wins. And I think that he's going to get the better of the striking exchanges more than Casey did. I also think he's not going to get taken down quite as much. And I think he's going to win more of the scrambles and get more takedowns of his own. So I'm going with Ricky Simone here to bounce back and get a victory. And in the co-main event here, we have a weird fight. Ovin St. Preux taking on Ben Rothwell. Ovin St. Preux, he is moving up a weight class. He's been a long time light heavyweight. And he's been a big guy, but he's making the move here to see if he can compete with these big boys. OSP has been very successful at light heavyweight. He even got a UFC title shot, but he looks like he may be fading a little bit. you know, in this heavyweight move is probably to try to resurrect his career. For Ben Roth, though, he's not been looking very good since returning from his USADA suspension, but, you know, he did pick up a win in his last fight. It was kind of controversial, but he got it done there with the nut shots. And when you look at this fight, man, I mean, it's just going to come down to, can OSP handle this forward pressure and these shots that Ben Roth is going to bring? Because you know what Ben Roth does at this point? He has, you know, he used to have a lot better movement and footwork and speed, so he could cut the cage off a lot better and force guys into the brawl that he wants. But Ben Rothwell is just willing to eat punches, eat shots, walk you down, and just tries to make it a war of attrition where he starts landing these bombs inside. And if you get hit by that guy, he has some crazy, weird, spooky power, man, where he'll put you out cold. I mean, we've seen him do it over and over and over again throughout his career. And Rothwell is also one of those guys that has, you know, tricky grappling, just like his opponent, Ovince St. Preux. But on the feet, you know, Ovince is going to be the quicker guy with his movement, with his footwork. But in recent years, man, Ovince's footwork and his movement has gotten a lot worse. He's become a lot more stationary. And when he gets hit, he stands straight up. He tends to shell up. I think that's going to be a bad recipe if he does that against a guy like Ben Rothwell. But Ovince, you know, he is going to have the chance to land a big head kick, land a straight punch when he comes in. He's a powerful man himself, and he's going to be the faster guy that can move. So if he can, you know, pull counter Ben into some shots, throw a head kick, land flush, I mean, he can hurt Ben too on the feet, don't be mistaken. But I think Ovince is going to want to try to grapple like he has been in recent fights, try to get Ben on his back. And I think if he can get on top of Ben Rothwell, he's going to have a lot of success. But I think it might be hard to take down such a big guy. It isn't like Ovince is a guy that's shooting doubles, shooting singles as a former college wrestler. He likes to get a lot of takedowns in the clinch, muscling guys. He's going to be the taller, bigger guy, light heavyweight. And he gets a lot of takedowns that way. But against Ben Rothwell, I think it's going to be a lot harder to get takedowns in the clinch. Ben has that really nice go-go choke. And man, the way I see this fight going down is I just think Ben Rothwell at some point in this fight is just going to land a shot and knock Ovince St. Preux out. I just think he might look terrible in his fights. He looks washed up. But man, I just think in this fight, this matchup, I'm going with Ben Rothwell here. Up next, we have an awesome fight. One of my favorite fighters, Glover Teixeira. He's taking on Anthony Smith. And Anthony Smith, he's making his return. He's been out almost a year now. And in his last match, he did earn the biggest victory of his career. He defeated Alexander Gustafsson in Sweden. If he can get a resounding win here versus Glover, he's going to be very close to a second UFC title shot. He's been going through a lot personally, though. I mean, for one, he can't go to his usual training camp at Factory X. He's been training at home. And to compound that, he had an intruder enter his house. He had a very traumatizing moment. You know, he had to fight that guy in front of his family. He said that his kids are sleeping in his room. It's been very hard to adjust. And all those things have to be taken into account when you're looking at this fight. I mean, his opponent, Glover, you know, Glover has his own gym, and he seems to have not faced nearly the same struggles that Smith has this camp. And Glover turned back the clock in 2019. He went undefeated. He was 3-0, beat three up-and-coming beasts. He showed he definitely still has a lot left. And if Glover can beat Anthony Smith, he's likely going to get a number one contenders match himself. So this is a make-or-break fight for him. If he ever wants another title shot, you know, needs to get a victory here. And if you've watched my channel, you know, I've been good at picking Glover fights, man. I'm actually 5-0 in his last five fights. A lot of those fights, he was the underdog, and I was able to pick the correct winner. So, you know, I feel like I have a very good read on Glover Teixeira. And when I was coming in this matchup, just looking at it on paper, career trajectory, all that, I was thinking, man, I mean, Anthony Smith is probably going to knock out Glover Teixeira. That's what I was thinking. But when I went back and watched the tape on this fight, man, I see why the line is so close, because Anthony Smith, a lot of red flags for me in the way that he fights when he's fighting a guy like Glover. Anthony Smith, he will kind of explode in with these, you know, straight punch combinations. He does have a nice jab. He has good elbows inside, and really his elbows are very dangerous. But the thing is, he starts slow in a lot of fights, really slow. And he struggles with forward pressure, guys that can close the distance and kind of get past his straight punches. And him and Glover have the same reach. So I think it's going to be, you know, interesting. I think it's going to be tougher for him. You know, when you watched Alexander Gustafsson, man, versus Anthony Smith, that was not the same Gustafsson that fought Glover. His footwork wasn't the same. And I think Anthony Smith kind of got off the hook there, because I think if he was fighting the Gustafson, that Glover fought, he would have gotten knocked out. But, you know, going back to Anthony with the footwork and all that, I just feel like he could sometimes get stationary, and instead of moving, like, you've seen these guys like Nikita Krylov, Alex Gustafson, they run away from Glover when he can get him against the cage, and he's throwing these hooks, and Glover has this head movement, he gets inside and cuts the cage off very well these days, very composed at cutting off the cage. And, you know, Anthony Smith will stay stationary at times, shell up. I think he likes to let opponents hit you, likes to let them, you know, think they're winning, wear them down, and then eventually he waits for you to make a mistake and finishes you, because he's losing a lot of fights before he wins them. And Anthony Smith also, if you go back and watch that Volkan Uzdemir fight, man, he got taken down. Volkan passed his guard easily, almost took his back. If Glover Teixeira takes him down and takes his back, passes his guard easily, he's going to finish Anthony Smith, in my opinion, man. And in that fight where it was grappling heavy, Anthony Smith really got very tired. So I feel like to beat Glover, I mean, Glover, obviously, he doesn't have as much head movement or speed as he used to have. So you have to catch him when he's at range with a straight shot. And he sometimes when you catch him, he'll kind of stand stiff, get stunned, stationary, and you can land 2-3 shots, put him down. The thing is, though, when you drop Glover, he's extremely good at, you know, if he doesn't go out cold and he's on his back, he's going to be able to recover. And I've heard interviews here, Anthony Smith talking about he thinks he's going to start slow and then submit Glover. Man, I mean, that's a terrible game plan, man. I really, when I was looking at this fight initially, I really thought that I was going to go with Anthony Smith here. But after watching the tape, man, I'm going with Glover Teixeira. I think he could knock him out in the first round. I think he could submit him. I just think Glover is going to be able to cut off the cage, walk him down. And if he doesn't get hit with a big shot or a big combination that knocks him out, I think he's going to be the guy with the better cardio. I think he's going to be the guy that is going to be landing the harder shots, and you're going to see Anthony Smith kind of like shelling up, looking like he's hurt. And I think if Glover gets a takedown, especially early in the fight, it could be over, man, and Glover could finish the fight. I mean, Anthony has good jiu-jitsu himself. If Anthony gets on top, or, you know, I mean, we saw Nikita almost submit Glover in his last fight. So Anthony, you know, he could get a submission if he could somehow take the back in a dominant position over Glover. Glover's a little bit tired or something like that. But to me, man, I'm going with Glover Teixeira here, and I'm actually pretty confident I'm going to put a bet on Glover, and I think he's going to finish Anthony Smith in the first three rounds.
So there you go. That's the breakdown for UFC Fight Night Smith versus Teixeira. So for the parlay of the week, I'm actually going to do Sajara Eubanks and Hunter Azur. I know a lot of people are going to be, you know, why do I pick Sajara Eubanks as such a big favorite? I just feel like she's an extremely safe pick, man. I mean, I know some people talk about the cardio, they're talking about certain things, but in this matchup, I feel like Sajara Eubanks is a very safe pick. Hunter Azur is a very safe pick. And that's a decent value parlay. I think it's plus money. So I like that parlay. I do like Omar Morales as an underdog. I'm very surprised that he's an underdog. I saw that Chase Sherman was an underdog as well. Alexander Hernandez is an underdog. So, like I said, obviously Glover Teixeira is an underdog. So there's a lot of underdogs that I like. But my underdog of the week is going to be Glover Teixeira. The most confident pick of the week is going to be Hunter Azur. So there you go, guys. Thanks for watching. Make sure to comment, like, subscribe. We'll be getting that next breakdown out to you guys shortly. Also, check out the new one if you haven't watched it yet for UFC 249. Can't fucking wait for that card. We're going to be getting UFC back. So, man, we're going to be having a lot of fights to enjoy recently. So hope you guys are ready, and let's fucking go, man.